The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 25th, 1987 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 1, Text 27.
Sutalam Vishwamurte Uru Dayang Vitalam Chatalam Cha Mahitalam Tadjaganam Mahipate Namhasatam Navisado Vinati Rejanuni Sutalang Vishamurte Uru Dayang Vitalam Jatalam Cha Mohitalam Tachaganang Mohipote Nabhastalang Nabisado Grinanti Dre, two, Januni, Tunis, Sutalam, the planetary system named Sutala, Viswamurte, in the universal form, Urudvayam, the two thighs, Vitalam, the planetary system named Vitala. Cha, also. Atalam, the planets named Atala. Cha, and Mahitalam, the planetary system named Mahitala. Tat, of that. Jaghanam, Mahipate, O King. Nabastalam, outer space. Nabhi Sara, the depression of the navel. Grinanti, they take it so. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Oh, there's no purport. The knees are the universal form of the planetary system of the name Sutala, and the two thighs are the Vitala and Atala planetary system. The hips are the Mahitala, and outer space is the depression of his navel. Translation with repetition. The knees are the universal form.
Knees are the universal.
Are the planetary system of the name Sutala.
Are the planetary system of the name Sutala.
And the two thighs, the Vitala and Atala planetary systems.
The
hips are Mahitala.
And
outer space is the depression of his navel.
Urustalam jyotiranikam asya giva mahabadhanam vaijanosya tapovarating viduradipumsa satyam tusirshani sahasashishnaha.
Translation of text 28. The chest of the original personality of the God, gigantic form, is the luminary planetary system. His neck is the Mahar planets. His mouth is the Janas planets. His forehead is the Tapas planet system, the topmost planetary system. Known as Satyaloka, is the head of he who has 1,000 heads. Thus end the purport, rather translation. Purport. The effulgent luminary planets like the sun and the moon are situated almost in the midplace of the universe. And as such, they are to be known as the chest of the original gigantic form of the Lord. And above the luminary planets are called also the heavenly planets of the universal directorate demigods, are the Maharjanas and Tapas planetary systems. And above all, they can... And above all, the Satyaloka planetary system, where the chief directors of the modes of material nature reside, namely Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. This Vishnu is known as the Kshirodakasai Vishnu, and he acts as the super soul in every living being. There are innumerable universes floating in the causal ocean, and in each of them he appears as a being fan. There are innumerable universes floating on the causal ocean, and each of them the representation of the Virat form of the Lord is there, along with innumerable suns, moons, heavenly demigods, Brahmas, Vishnus, Shivas, all of them situated in one part of the inconceivable potency of Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:42.
Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam sena stito jagat.
But what is the need for all this? Is there, Arjuna, for this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Purport, the Supreme Lord is represented throughout the entire material and universes by his entering into all things as the Supersoul. The Lord here tells Arjuna that there is no point in understanding how things exist in their separate opulence and grandeur. He should know that all things are existing due to Krishna's entering them as super soul. From Brahma, the most gigantic entity, down to the smallest ant, all are existing because the Lord has entered each and every one and is situated and sustaining them. Worship of demigods is discouraging because even the greatest demigods like Brahma and Shiva only represent part of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. He is the origin of everyone born, and no one is greater than him. He is Samatha, which means that no one is superior to him and no one is equal to him. In the Vishnu Mantra it is said that one who considers the Supreme Lord on the same category with demigods, be they even Brahma or Shiva, becomes at once an atheist. If, however, one thoroughly studies the different descriptions of the opulences and expansions of Krishna's energy, then one can understand without any doubt the position of Lord Sri Krishna and can fix his mind in the worship of Krishna without deviation. The Lord is all-pervading by the expansion of his pure devotee. Therefore, they are always situated in the transcendental position. Devotional service and worship of Krishna are very clearly indicated in this chapter in verses 8 to 11. That is why the way of pure devotional service, how can one attain the highest perfection, the highest devotional perfection of association with the Supreme Person of Godhead, has been thoroughly explained in this chapter. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purport to the 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the opulence of the Absolute. But there's no need for Krishna to explain all the details. Everything is going on by his presence. He is the underlying factor which is causing everything to go on. If we know that, in fact, then where's the question of neglecting Krishna or forgetting Krishna? We forget Krishna when we forget that he is entered into everything and everything is going on because of his personal presence. If he wants to, he can have anything happen. So here in these verses, where it describes the different planetary systems of the universe as being part of the universal form. Universal form is only possible for the Lord to personally manifest. Here also the Krishna is glorified that these planetary systems, the higher planetary systems, can be worshipped, respected by the Vaishnava devotees, by those following the Krishna consciousness. process these different planets, whether it's Mahar, Janas, Tapas, or Satyaloka. Actually, there's a long lifespan which the residents of these different planets have. Even some of these residents can go from one planet to the next, some mystic process. So here, in this planet, there's always the attempt to try to go to other planets using mechanical means. But the system they use is they take with them the environment, the oxygen, the food, everything. They take with them. They're not able to acclimatize to that other planet. When a yogi goes to another planet, he actually is able to take up residence there. In other words, on this planet, they're given like tourist visa, not green card, to the other planet. They can only go and come back. They're completely taken their own environment with them. So in one sense, they're not really going to the other planet. They can't stay there. They cannot integrate with what's the actual living condition in that planet. They're only able to see the very external form of the planet. Just like they claim to have gone to the moon planet, but all they show is some few rocks, and they're not able to perceive any life there. Because they're looking for life as we know it. Just like we breathe in oxygen, we breathe out carbon dioxide. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. And this way we have a cycle on this planet. We think, therefore, that all life must be sustained by this type of cycle, oxygen and carbon dioxide. So they look in the universe, where else is there oxygen and carbon dioxide? I don't think that there's any other form of life except this two form. But recently, it was published in All Star Back to Godhead, there was some scientific discovery made that in the bottom of the sea, the ocean floor, in one place there was a volcano, some kind of gas coming out, ammonia gas. This ammonia gas, if any normal human being or fish is to just get in contact with that gas, they'll die immediately. Highly poisonous. Recently there was some ice cream factory where the ammonia gas leaked out and people had to be evacuated. They're taken off by a stretcher. Very highly poisonous, this ammonia gas. But from the earth, somehow this ammonia gas was coming out. So they found at these extreme temperatures on the bottom of the ocean, in the midst of that ammonia gas, there were certain life forms. As soon as you took them out of the ammonia gas, they died. But in the ammonia gas, they lived. They are breathing the ammonia gas and they're breathing out something else. Their whole life cycle was based on breathing ammonia gas. And these entities don't live anywhere else in the world. They're simply living there. So taking that, you could understand that maybe on some planet, Venus, there's nitrogen or somewhere else or something else. They can be breathing nitrogen. They can be breathing ammonia. They can breathe anything. Whatever type of. They can also have different levels of dimension. Heavenly planets doesn't mean that they live on the same physical dimension, but they live on a higher, subtler dimension whereby they can live for much longer. Because the physical body has a limit how long it can live. But a mental body or a more subtle body made of finer elements can survive much longer. So there it says that there's life on all the different planets, but the life is situated in different ways, not the stereotype way that we know it here on this planet. So we think that, well, there's no other life exactly the way we are situated, the way we are living. That is a very foolish type of statement. Actually, the Vedas describe that there is life on every planet. We've heard that how Bhaktisiddhanta, he one time told his, suddenly this was walking in a walk, and he told his disciples, looking up at the moon, we have to go there and start some preaching. He's saying that now the moon planet has become very materialistic, very Krishna Bahirmukh. they become very mundane in their consciousness. They're not worshipping Krishna. There's an urgent need to go and preach there. All the devotees are. You see, there are some devotees, they go anywhere in the universe that there's opportunity to preach. We think that, oh, someone's traveling every few days by jet from this country to that country. That's nothing. What traveling is that? Narada, you know, the great preachers, they move from planet to planet, from universe to universe, from galaxy to galaxy going on preaching, different planets. They don't also require jet planes and so on. They can go on by their own spiritual potency. So there are these different planetary levels. And on each level there's a type of standard of living. Just as they have 5-star hotel, 4-star, 3-star, 2-star, 1-star, no star, minus star. Similarly, the different planetary system, there's 14 planetary systems. 7 are plus, 7 are minus. Minus 7 star, plus 7 star. You go minus 7 star, that means you suffer like anything. You see. Even 1 or 2 star is tolerable, 0 star. But the minus stars, you have to suffer too much. And just like sometime you go in the some third world, they call it a 3-star hotel. You go there, it's you're better to sleep on the street. I went in Iran and I was almost machine gunned down by the revolutionary guards there, trying to get into the temple at 1 o'clock in the morning. And the taxi cab driver said, "Get down, get down." I looked, and all of a sudden they came by with the machine gun turrets. I went in taxi quick. So I said, "This is very dangerous. Better come here in the morning." So I went to some hotel that was supposed to be like a 3-star or something like that. It was so horrible. You know, propped a chair against the door, put my own cheddar on top of the bed. I didn't want to lay on it. It was so horrible. You know, it was like actually, just that was a question that there was nowhere else to go. So, like this, each planetary system, they have their own relative standard. And some of the standard, they may get acclimatized to it, but it's actually a very hellish type of standard. Therefore, they are considered lower planetary systems, or it may be completely devoid of any kind of religious principle of a certain type. Therefore, even though there seems to be some material facility, it's actually the relationships are very hellish. The relationships are based on some very hellish standards. So that people, even though they have some facility, they're not happy. So, if we see the whole universe as being a part of Krishna, the upper planetary systems are always described here from the waist up. The lower planetary systems are described from the waist down. This way gives us a basic understanding of the level of existence on each planet. Actually, just that this planet has more facility than this planet. It's like if you're going in an airplane on economy class, you have one facility. Then you go on a business class, a little bigger seat. So they give you a free headphone. That's about it. You don't have to pay for your... So then you go first class. Then you got a complete reclining seat, put your foot out, less crowded. But still, you're in the same plane. It's not that you're out of the plane. In one planet, they got a little better facility, a little more elbow room, a little nicer. But still, you're in the same universe. You can't get off the universe. This big universe is just like one big prison house. You can't get out by ordinary means. So according to one's karma, they get a certain seat in the universe. Either Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, or finally Satyaloka. But until they become completely Krishna conscious, they cannot go back to Vaikuntha Loka. They cannot go back to the spiritual world. Therefore, it's essential to develop one's Krishna consciousness. So luminary planets are in the middle. Upper planets, heavenly planets are in the top. And above everything is Satyaloka planetary system. Then beyond that, it's all within Devi Dhamma. Devi Dhamma, Mahesha Dhamma, Vaikuntha Dhamma, Goloka Dhamma. In the Brahma Sanghita, it explains that these four levels. Devi Dham, the 14 planetary systems in this world, then come Mahesha Dhamma. Above that is the Vaikuntha Dham, Ramajoti and Vaikuntha Dham, then finally Golok Dham. So, a person can book their ticket which of the places they like to go. Janalok, Tapalok, Maharlok, or if they like to go to Mahesha Dham, Kailash, or to Vaikuntha, or to Golok. According to how the person develops his consciousness, that's the place he'll get. So naturally the most recommended place to go to is the spiritual world, is Golok Vrindavan. But to go there, one has to be a pure devotee of Krishna. Has to be trained in simply worshipping Krishna without a cessation. One should simply worship Krishna, then you can go to Krishna Loka. If you play for economy ticket and you want to ride first class, they'll throw you out of the seat, get back. It's like that. I told the pastime how that one time that Viswamitra, he wanted to send that one Sudra up to Indralok. But he didn't have the necessary karma. But anyway, Viswamitra was a great yogi. Using his own austerity, he decided, all right, I'll send you to Indralok. So then, Viswamitra had been doing a lot of tapasya. He had so much punya and pious results from all his tapasya. So using his own force, he sent Harishchandra up to the Indralok. So here the Sudra walks in on Indralok. You know, Indra says, what the heck is going on? You know, it's like, can't understand where this person came from. So he says, you know, what are you doing here? I said, I was sent here by Vishwamitra, you know. He said, some Sudra is sitting here, we come up here to Indraloka. I said, go back down. So Harishchandra starts falling down again from Indraloka back to the earthly planet. Then Vishwamitra sees him coming down, so what's going on here? Puts him back. So then he's going back up, and Indra says, what? No, down. So then Vishwamitra is pushing him up, and Indra's mystic power is pushing him down. So Vishwamitra was not strong enough to overcome Indra's power. He couldn't push it, but Indra wasn't also strong enough to completely neutralize Vishwamitra's power. So then Harishchandra was halfway between this planet and the Indralok. He's just there floating in outer space. And then Vishwamitra is going, go up! Indra said, go down! He's hanging there, you know, he can't get anywhere. So after some time, Vishwamitra thought, this is draining my energy and it's not getting anywhere. So then he got an idea and he created an entire duplicate heavenly planet. Maha, Tapa, Jana, the whole Indralok, everything duplicate, all the upper planetary systems. And he put Harishchandra there in charge. Then Indra said, now this is really a problem. Because now, you know, it's like all of a sudden you got in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, you got another America. You know, everything, and then there's some other, it would completely, you know, throw off the international balance. Right? They got it all worked out, superpowers and mini powers and third world nations. All of a sudden they got an entire new continent, a new country with, so like this, all of a sudden Harishchandra, he's in charge of the entire duplicate heavenly planets. All, so then Indra, he got really upset that now this is going to create a lot of confusion. So he went down to Vishwamitra and he requested that, can you wind up this extra planets? He said, if you take Harishchandra, I'll wind him up. He said, okay, we'll take him. They made a compromise. So they took him, and then Vishwamitra, he took away his other planets. Then, but he had completely extinguished all of his mystic power that he had attained by tapasya. So then he had to do again tapasya to build up his mystic power. But then Indra saw, no, he's building up his powers again. This guy caused me so much trouble before. So then he asked for some volunteers amongst the apsaras to go down and distract him for a while. So then that's when they got Menaka to go down. with her specially mystic ankle bells, and she came down there while Vishwamitra was meditating, and ching, 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 she's walking, and he opens his eyes, and she completely bewilders him with her beauty, and he falls down with her. Then Shakuntala, very pious lady, is born, and Vishwamitra, he's really upset that he fell down like that, again, he started doing tapasya, and this time he was more determined. So Indra just got a little bit of a reprieve. So like this, the dangers are there. Even sometimes some yogi is practicing, the demigods take it, maybe he's trying to compete with us. Next thing he'll want to take over our position, or he'll create some imbalance. Sometimes even the demigods will obstruct someone in their spiritual path. There are so many forces that can try to obstruct one. There's human beings, there are subtle entities, there's also the demigods. Different entities are there to obstruct one in one's advancement. Therefore, one has to be very fixed under the shelter of Guru and Krishna for their shelter. As a devotee, enjoying the shelter of the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya of Krishna, one can be protected from so many of these dangers. Different devotees of Krishna, Hanuman and other great devotees, they are sometimes prayed to give shelter and protection to the devotees. Actually, trying to advance in spiritual life is something which is beset with many obstacles. The process is very simple, it's very easy to perform, but there are also many tests and many obstacles that may be put in the way. If one is not taking the shelter of Krishna, then one can easily be misled like Vishwamitra was. But if one has the shelter of Krishna, then it's easier to cross over. We have to be, therefore, always humble. Trinadapi sunichena tarori vasahi sunamanena mananena sikirtaniya sadahari. Straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, always devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respect unto others, one can constantly chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That devotee should never think that his power is simply coming from himself alone. That somehow because of his austerities or because of his practices of devotional service, now he's beyond the influence, or he's somehow independently powerful. This would open one up for being smashed, being attacked. One should constantly remind oneself of the fact that we are the servant of the servant of Krishna. Without Krishna's mercy, without Guru's mercy, we are nothing. Look at Indra. When Indra was in his palace and he was being glorified by these different demigods from these different planets, Tavas and Siddhas and so on, and Gandharvas, his guru happened to walk into the assembly. Normally, as soon as the guru comes, you stand up and you offer him a seat and you pay obeisances and you greet him and you have various obligations to do to the guru. But somehow Indra is that the guru is often not coming. So this time he disregarded. He didn't do anything. Didn't greet the guru, didn't offer him his seat, didn't stand up. He was just sitting there being praised, and his guru came and he just neglected him. The Brihaspati could see that he's become infatuated by his material opulence. He doesn't understand that without the blessing of guru, he couldn't have any of these things. He doesn't understand that these are all coming from Krishna simply because he's serving the guru. So Brihaspati, he immediately left that place. This is in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. He left that place, and Indra, as soon as he saw his guru leave, immediately he could realize he committed a great offense. In fact, even in the assembly, immediately, this is a sign of a devotee. When they make a mistake, they can immediately admit it. They don't try to maintain a false. They say, by the nature of maya, someone might become implicated in some mistaken situation. But once they realize, they immediately they can understand that they made a mistake. That's the difference between a devotee and the demon. The demon will remain in a false position right to the end. Like Ravana. Ravana never gave in. Everyone told him, you made a huge mistake, give back Sita. Even the last day, after all of his sons were killed, all of his generals were killed, everyone was finished. Only Ravana was left. Ram was ready to just kill Ravana. He could, alright, I give you 24 hours. You give Sita back, and I'll spare you. But instead of 24 hours, Ravana simply made plans how he can defeat Ram. But never get the sense that things are going against him, that he should did a mistaken thing, he should give back Sita. That is the demonic nature. They're so stubborn. They'll never accept that they're wrong. But the devotee mentality, they make a mistake, they can immediately realize, I made a mistake. Just like Prithkid Maharaj, when he put that snake on Samikha Rishi. Then immediately he knew that I made a mistake. It was a foolish thing to do. But it was too late in his case. In the case of Indra also, soon as he had made this mistake, immediately he told everyone, what is the use of this apya? What is the use of this position if it makes us infatuated and then we start to we neglect our guru and we commit offense. By these offense we can fall down. We lose everything. So better not to have such positions if this is going to bewilder us. So even great devotees, they can also be bewildered. Of course, sometimes we discuss Indra. Indra is a position. Sometimes Indra is a pure devotee. Sometimes Indra is a very pious soul that's in that position, but he feels intimidated. Sometimes these descriptions are not from this regarding the same Indra. It may be from a different day of Brahma. Every day of Brahma, there's a new Indra. Or can be a new Indra. It's a position like President of the United States. It's a position. Whether it's Reagan or Carter or Ford or Kennedy, whoever. Someone is there. There's a position. So Indra is a position. How long their Indra stays in that position, I'm not 100% sure, but it's this position that changes from time to time. The person who fills that position changes. It's not always the same. His life is not as long as Brahma's. So this Indra, he started to just criticize himself publicly that I made this mistake. Now I'm going to go and fall at the feet of Brihaspati and beg forgiveness. But Brihaspati, he could understand. He was more powerful than Indra. So when Indra tried to find him, he disappeared and hid. Indra looked everywhere, he couldn't find him. As soon as the demigods had insulted their guru, the demons heard about it. They said, now these demigods are finished. Without guru to protect them, they got nobody. They immediately worshipped their guru. And they attacked the demigods and routed them. Indra and all the demigods had to run. The demons became more powerful because they had committed offense to the guru. Indra went to Brahma and asked what to do. Then Brahma told them, you are so foolish, how could you do such a thing? So then he gave him an idea that you accept Vishwarupa as a priest. So you don't have any, your guru's not there like a Shiksha guru, you take him as a Puruhit, as a priest. In the meantime, he can help you. And then after that, you can defeat the demons. So even someone who's a very powerful devotee, who's in a very big position, just by a little neglect even of the spiritual master, he lost everything. So the devotee always remains fixed in that idea that anything I have, any ability, any achievement, any devotional service that I'm able to perform, that simply by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, Guru and Gauranga. The devotee doesn't accept it as his own personal glory. This is the secret how to become humble. By not taking success as due to one's own soul ability, but rather taking that maybe there was some desire, but ultimately the success is due to the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Others may give that devotee credit. Somehow his desire was there and he was able to get the mercy of Krishna. But the devotee realizes that actually, on my own I can't do anything, it's ultimately due to Guru and Krishna's mercy. This self-consciousness of giving the credit to Guru and Krishna by the devotee, this is the safeguard. If that's not there, the person thinks he's independently powerful, independently situated. You see, the real Paramhamsa, the symptom is that he'll always be surrendered to Krishna. Artificially, if someone thinks he's Paramhamsa, then he may think that now I'm above all the rules and regulations, I'm above, I don't need any more the mercy of Krishna, so they just kind of think they can go on their own steam. Then what happens is they have a problem. They lose the shelter of Krishna and then they get smashed by so many of the obstacles that are always ready to work as Maya's agents to defeat someone. So this way, we need to cultivate this consciousness right from the very beginning of our spiritual life. So Lord Chaitanya said we should basically wear this mantra around our, as if it was around our neck. Chinadapi suni chena tharori vasi shunavane namaradena kirtaniya sarahari. Then we can safeguard ourselves from the different tricks of illusion. Just to bring everything into focus, we can see how there, as Krishna, as Prabhupada mentions here, there are innumerable universes floating on the causal ocean. And in each of them, the representation of the Virat form of the Lord is there along with innumerable suns, moons, heavenly demigods, Brahmas, Vishnus, and Shivas. All of them situated in one part of the inconceivable potency of Lord Krishna. How great Krishna is, and what one inconceivable part of his potency is manifesting everything. The same Krishna, he's coming down and he's accepting our prasadam offerings, he's accepting our worship. We shouldn't take Krishna for granted or lightly. How merciful he is to come down and accept this opportunity for us to worship him. Therefore we should make every attempt to make Krishna very satisfied. Whether one, either in the beginning one may appreciate Krishna for all of his transcendental glories, his greatness in relation to everything else. Then the higher level one develops a spontaneous love for Krishna whereby one simply wants to please Krishna out of deep desire for Krishna's own satisfaction. But that's something which happens in a very advanced state. In the beginning state, we should be conscious that Krishna is so great, the greatest, without a second. Therefore, we should very carefully serve the Lord. We should avoid all type of offenses, which are different obstacles in the path of devotional service. Any question? Yes. No, this is a Virat Rupa, universal form. The Virat Rupa is the universal form is to help us conceive the whole universe. And then see that that is one of the forms of the Lord. And we can see how great the Lord is. Sometimes you just see Krishna standing with a flute and two arms, you don't get the proper perspective who Krishna is. So for those who are a little materialistic, in the beginning they advise meditate on the Lord as universal form. It's a universal form to get the relative position. Like the outer space is the depression in his navel. The outer space is so vast. What is the depression navel? It's a small area. But that comparison is given. That for Krishna, the vastness of the universe is insignificant. Also, it shows that outer space is in the middle section. Also, the sun and the moon are in the middle section. But then as you go higher up, there are higher planetary systems which are in the upper part of the universe. And they're situated in some unique manner. Those include planetary systems like the Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and finally on the very top of the lotus stem is the Satyaloka. Back to Mike. Did I say planetary system? The topmost planetary system. It says here, there is. You see, the point is that there's millions of planets out there, isn't it? So just as you got in this planet, first world, second world, third world, you know, they say basically if you want to go from England or France to America, they give you the visa the same day. If you want to go from India or some of the third world, you have to fill out a bank form, show your. You got a job, you're going to come back, this, you know, because they figure that, well, unless you're already kind of on that level, they don't want you to come over here because they figure you're going to try to stay here illegally as an illegal immigrant or something. So there are different, but there are many countries which have basically a similar level of economic development. So there's 14 planetary systems means that 14 levels. Just like I said, seven stars up, seven star down, five star hotel for the sake, seven star planet. So there may be many, many planets on the same level. That's what they say, Jana planetary system, within different what we would call, say, galaxies, or, but on a particular level of consciousness, there may be many planets. When you come up to that level, you can go from one planet to the next. When you're down here in the lower level, just like someone who's really poor, he can't go anywhere. You can only take a bus somewhere. But once you come up to a certain economic level, you can fly anywhere in the world. Doesn't matter what country you're in. You're on that level. So once you're on the level of a Janaloka or a Siddhaloka planet, you can move from one planet to the next. You can see all the planets, but you can't go to the higher planet. You can go on the same level. Like if you're sitting in a business class on the plane, you go back to economy if you want. They don't stop you. But if you want to go to first class, they say, can't come. So, this is the thing, that there are obviously more than 14 planets in the universe. There's millions of different kind of planets and luminaries and moons and so on. So they can be categorized into 14 levels. Planets where people live, like we are living, kind of similar, maybe not the same type of physical mechanism may be there, but the similar type of consciousness and similar kind of frame of life. There may be many planets or places, you know, they just say loka in Sanskrit. Loka meaning it's a planet. When in English, when you say planet, you think of something that rotates around the sun as a planet. What is that? There's no word in the English for just what is an object in the sky. You know, one of those round things that are there floating. You think you can get planets and suns, that's all. There's no, and moons. There's the three words. So the closest you come to is planet. But in Sanskrit, you say loka. Loka doesn't mean that it's necessarily, everything has got its own orbit around something. But it is called loka, means that it's an object in the firmament, object in outer space, a big mass of whatever. So we say just the closest thing we can say is it's a planet. That doesn't mean that it's a planet in the sense that it particularly rotates around this sun or that planet. It may have its own orbit, but it's a planet, meaning it's a planetary system. It's a group of planets in the outer space which have a similar level of development of consciousness by their residents. In other words, the category is done not by simply some material, by some material status that, well, this one has got this amount of nitrogen or something. The category is based on the consciousness of the person. The residence there, their lifespan, their consciousness, their level of power, their influence in the universe. This is calculated, therefore it's called as a Janatapur Soan. Each planetary system has got a different influence. Just like someone becomes a multimillionaire in America, he has a different influence on society than someone who's making $25,000 a month or someone who's on a welfare check. But they're all part of the, they're all national citizens. They all have to pay tax, so they all have certain obligation. They're not completely free. But they may have relative more facility in one way or another. So like that, on different planets, there's different kinds of influence, types of facilities. Some are more restrictive, some are more... When you get to the higher planetary systems, it means you are more pious, and you're given more freedom to move about the universe, to do things. And they try to achieve self-realization, like in Siddhaloka, or Satyaloka. So all this, of millions and millions of planets, for lack of a better word, in the sky, look at the Milky Way, how many suns and luminaries are there. So, each of them have people in charge of their activity, and each of them are categorized according to a particular level of existence that's there. So therefore it's considered as the Tapa Maha. Is that alright? Any other question? It says the effulgent luminary planets like the sun and the moon are situated almost in the midplace of the universe. Prabhupada differentiates that there's luminary planets and there's the sun. That every object in the outer space has got a certain orbit. But that the sun and this planet is in a specific situation whereby it holds a central position in relation to the pole star, in relation to the rest of the luminaries. Therefore, in the Vedas, there's a description of Surya Loka. And Surya Loka has been translated as the sun. So there's only one Surya Loka, or sun, as such. And the other luminaries, we call them suns in, say, in English, or in the they call it, well, this is the different suns. But Prabhupada differentiates between our sun is Surya Loka, or the sun, and the other objects, the other luminary, they're like suns and moons. Some directly, some reflecting light, or some directly effulgent, producing their own light. But they are not the Surya Loka. They are not the sun. They are luminary planets like the sun. They may, some be bigger, some may be smaller. They are luminary planets like the sun, but they are not the sun. The sun has got, or the Surya Loka has got some special nomenclature about it. So to differentiate, Prabhupada explains here, the effulgent luminary planets like the sun and the moon. Obviously, anyway, it's a different type of illumination. The sun's illumination is warming, and the moon's illumination is cooling. Hare Krishna.